Everybody, welcome back to this. I'm your host, Shauna Griffiths, and as always, we're having a real talk with a real leader today. And folks, I am really excited for today's conversation. It's one that I have some passion for as well. We're talking about the food revolution related to the healthcare space. And we today have with us Samantha Citro Alexander, who is the co-founder of Bitewell. So, Sam, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I cannot think of a better way to kick off the year.
Oh, it's so true. I was thinking about that in advance of, you know, the recording this morning, and I'm thinking, like, what a great time of the year, because the episode is actually going to hit in February, but it's still a time where people are figuring out, well, what, you know, where do they sit related to whatever goal they set for the year that they may have either already fallen off a wagon or something like that. And I just love what I've taken from my understanding of your company is really about navigating health through food. And it's so important because I think that there's so much misinformation, information, fear. And so I think to remove all of that and actually, to me, it seems like you're really empowering people and through organizations. So would love for you to just like give people a foundation of context around what you're doing with Bitewell.
Absolutely. And to your point about February, something that's so interesting about the month of February as it relates to New Year's resolutions is that it is the month where most people fall off of their resolutions. Oh. So if you're listening to this in February, get back on the horse. You can do this. Awesome. So a little bit about us and what we're building. So at Bitewell, we are pioneering food as a healthcare benefit. Why should you care about that? What I think is really interesting is over the last decade, healthcare premiums, so the thing that you are paying every month out of your paycheck to cover your healthcare and health insurance costs, have risen about 50%. So you're paying about 50% more this year than you were a decade ago. But salaries have not increased at the same rate. And so our healthcare spending is outpacing even inflation, which we know has been a huge topic of conversation over the last year. When we look at the kind of macro stats around that, healthcare spending has topped or is about to top $5 trillion by 2028. And that's just in the US. No one within our ecosystem of care can afford that $5 trillion spend. Not payers, not insurers, definitely not me and you. I mean, I don't know about you, but definitely not me. And so when we examine and kind of dive deep into the breakdown of that $5 trillion, what was fascinating to me is that over 75% of those costs, so over $3.5 trillion, is spent treating chronic diseases that are preventable by eating the right food. And so if we changed our mindset around health and healthcare and focused on the lifestyle basics, you know, food, fitness, stress earlier on, and really thought about them as core tenets of our healthcare system, we would be spending trillions of dollars less on disease treating. And that is when we talk about the food revolution that Bitewell is leading, that is what we mean. We are leading that revolution, that change in how people think about health and the healthcare system.
Yeah, and I love it. Again, going back to this idea of the new year, I think that so many people will think about, like, I want to look a different way, or I want to fit into my jeans, or I want to lose like weight or whatever. And so I think it's such a great thing. And it's actually something that I've been thinking a lot about is like, how are we moving forward into this new year from the health standpoint? So how can I be stronger? How can I be, you know, physically stronger, mentally stronger? And the two are so combined. I think that there can actually be so much stress around just what are you going to eat every day and all the decisions that you have to make every day. And especially so many people who are listening to this are, you know, executives, they're leaders, they're people in the corporate world. And I can't tell you how many times I hear people say like, oh yeah, it's like, I don't usually eat until like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Or, you know, I don't really eat all day. I just don't have time. I eat dinner. And again, it's like, if we're really thinking about health and empowerment and being strong and operating our best, I think this is a really great thing for us to think about as business people.
Absolutely. And that person that you're describing was me and still is me sometimes, if I'm being totally honest, but I'm better now. Because I understand that, you know, spikes and dips in blood sugar impact how I think, impact the decisions that I make. And as a business owner, I can't responsibly allow myself to treat myself so poorly because I am not thinking my best. I'm not the best steward for my company when I'm not fueling my body appropriately. And so when I, you know, have those days where I haven't eaten anything until 3 o'clock, I have to remind myself that it is my responsibility as a steward of this company to eat breakfast.
Exactly. Exactly. So let's talk about the element of the company, of your offerings, where it's actually a benefit to the company, because I think, again, in this landscape where there's so much competition over staff and benefits that we're providing for people, I think that people who are listening, it's a good, again, like, what are all the reasons to do it? So we've talked about health and wellness and the healthcare and being strong and being productive, but also, I mean, just the reality that this is a benefit that we as leaders can provide our staff, which can be huge for retention and for, you know, new hiring.
Absolutely. And over the last couple of years, we've been hearing a lot about total benefits, lifestyle benefits. How can I give my team the flexibility to choose the benefits package that's right for them? And one of the things that we know drives retention and happiness and culture building is food. But the way that we have been giving food benefits has not, in the past, has not positively impacted health. We're doing things like, you know, pizza on Fridays, or we're all going to order sushi together, or, you know, we're going to stock the pantry with like chips snacks and cookies and snacks. And none of that is bad. That's, I mean, all of that is great, but we can do better. So what we at Bitewell allow you to do is give your team access to a marketplace. So think of it as like a giant food app that pulls in all of the food around them. We pull in restaurant meals for pickup and delivery, just like DoorDash or Uber Eats. We pull in groceries for pickup and delivery, just like Instacart. We pull in all the meal kit companies that you love, like HelloFresh and Factor and Home Chef. We bring them all into one place, and then we score them for you based on your individualized health needs. So if you tell us that you're gluten-free and you're pre-diabetic and you hate cilantro, we will take all of that information and we'll score the entire food supply around you and say, hey, you know, if you're hungry for lunch, these 10 meals that can be delivered to you in the next 15 minutes are really great for you for the following reasons. Or we'll say, you know, you're doing grocery shopping for your family this week. Maybe think about this set of meals and this set of snacks because it will help improve your overall health. And you can offer access to our platform, all of the data, and even a stipend for the food itself as a benefit to your team, which is what we hear people being most excited about when you're able to say, you know, my company gives me $100 a month to spend on healthy food. That's a really awesome benefit that doesn't cost you that much in the long run.
Yeah, absolutely. And so when you say, oh, you've said a couple times that you get to pick the food around you. And I just want to pause on that because I think that's another thing. What my understanding is that this is great for, doesn't matter if you're either on site at the office or remote. And there's so many of us, and hopefully more of us get to continue to be hybrid and remote. I think it's really important. But again, like around me, maybe in Denver, but for my colleagues in at CMD and Hijinks in Portland, around them could be literally like in their backyard, right?
Yep, exactly. So it takes into account your location, wherever you are. And we're really awesome for remote and hybrid teams because you can offer the same benefit to everyone, whether they're in the office or at home.
Yeah, that's so important. I mean, I just think that we have to work harder in this new and like working environment to close that gap between if you do have some people hybrid or remote and other people on site, because there's so many times where it's like, oh, the on-site people get XYZ, you know, benefit and others don't. So again, like those of you who are listening, who are continuing to think through solutions, this one hits a lot of things.
Totally. I'm so passionate about that. We talk about it as benefits parity. And so it's like, why do my in-office colleagues get to have, you know, free lunch and access to the gym and get to go to the pool and get to do all of these cool things? And I don't get any of that when I work from home. And it sounds silly, but it's meaningful, especially when you're thinking about trying to build a company culture as a hybrid team. You don't want your remote team members to feel like second-class citizens of your team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I love that you actually use the word culture there, because again, this is something that actually can help facilitate culture and how people are feeling about the company that they are a part of. So again, just like, I think that was a really good word to use there, a way to talk about it and think about it. So now that we know a bit about the company, which is a great foundation for this, I want to get a bit more into like how did you start this? And I mean, I'll also pause and say that you've had a lot of success. You told me that you've recently won an award. And I'll actually also add, I usually tell the audience how I know my guests. And so speaking of your award is a great time to do that. So folks, Pilar Terry, who is part of the ownership group of POV Agency, she is the one who recommended Sam and Bitewell. And so POV was instrumental in a recent award that you won. So I would love for you to share that with the audience.
Yeah, for sure. So we opened up our emails on January 3rd and saw that we had won Shortlister's Top Vendor Award for Corporate Nutrition Programs for 2023, which is really exciting. So all of the HR and benefits directors who are out there looking for benefit solutions on Shortlister are seeing Bitewell, which is a huge win for us in this space that we entered not very long ago.
Yeah. And so I would love for you to talk more about that, because again, like this is, it's new, and for you to be like, you know, seeing so much success so quickly, give people an idea of like, how did you start the company? I know you have a co-founder, you know, how's it come to be that today, you know, like where you are today with the company?
Yeah, for sure. So, my background is not in food or healthcare at all.
I love this part.
my background is primarily in the beauty industry, a little bit in financial services, and I have an acting degree. So I'm really just like a lateral human being. I like to learn about lots of different areas of the world. But from a personal life perspective, I have been really interested in food and food's impact on the body's health for decades. In the early 2000s, myself, my sister, all of my cousins, all at the same time, were diagnosed with a bunch of allergies and dietary restrictions that changed how we eat. And my poor grandmother I come from a big Italian family. We would do dinner every Sunday night at my grandmother's house. My poor grandmother had to relearn how to make all of our family recipes. Like, I couldn't have dairy. My sister couldn't have nuts. My other cousin couldn't have eggs. And what was this poor woman supposed to serve us? So that was my first foray into food's impact on the body's health. I went through school, I went to college, I thought I was going to be an actor. It turns out that I didn't want to do that. And I ended up accidentally in the beauty industry at this really cool company called Juara Skincare. And they developed a line of skin and body care products based on the Indonesian herbal medicinal tradition of Jamu. And through my work with them, I had the opportunity to go to Indonesia and to learn about Jamu and to learn about all of these amazing ingredients like turmeric and galangal root that we now know a lot about. But this was, you know, over 10 years ago. Crazy. And no one was talking about turmeric or how it not only impacted the body externally and was a great skincare ingredient, but also was an incredible ingredient when ingested to reduce inflammation in the body. And so that kicked me off on a whole other part of my journey around food and health, where I became really deeply interested in both ingredients and quality of ingredients and how quality impacts how our body digests certain types of foods, how processing impacts how our body digests certain types of foods. Yeah. And so I've been nerding out about food for years. And in mid-2020, I was introduced to my co-founder, Chris Finucci, who had started several beverage companies super successfully, had sold one of them, and was exploring the world of food and health from a convenience perspective. So he was like, hey, I'm on the road 200 days a year, 150 days a year, a lot. I land in a new city and I need to figure out how to find food that's not going to negatively impact my health. How do I do that? And so he had started working on Bitewell 1.0, which was a healthy food delivery app that would help you sort things near you by like, hey, I'm vegetarian and I don't want to eat tomatoes. We've taken that concept and exploded it into this very holistic, we're going to look at 360 different attributes of health, and we're going to match those attributes to the entire food supply and help you figure out how to manage your health through food. So that's the long-ish story of how we got here. But it's, I think.
But hold on a second. You said 2020. When you said that, I literally looked down at my calendar thing and I'm like, I had to be reminded that it was 2023 or something. But I mean, like, that's pretty remarkable to make such a change and breakthrough in such a short period of time. And, you know, and the fact, I think it's just so interesting because it is really need-based, and the way that you brought it forward is literally a solution. I think so many times when people think of things like, oh, I'm just passionate about it, so I'll start something. But again, it's like, if you can really tap into creating a solution, then it seems to me like that's when you can catch fire.
Yep, absolutely. And that speaks so much to what we've done since mid-2020 until now, has been figuring out how to come to market in a way that not only provides a solution for the end user, but also provides a solution for our conduit to getting to them. And what I mean by that is we basically spent mid-2020 through to January of 2022 on product development, because we needed to categorize the entire food supply and assign health attributes to the entire food supply. Our development cycle was really, really long. We have this massive database with tens of millions of products and meals and hundreds of attributes for each. It took a really long time. As we were doing that development, we were mini testing different ways to come to market. So we're like, first, we're going to go direct to consumer. We quickly realized we're not going to go direct to consumer. Super expensive, really hard to cut through the noise and explain to people.
So crowded.
So crowded with solutions, with, I'm going to put solutions in quotes, solutions that don't really solve the food health problem, but like dance around it. So we decided, no, we're not going to do that. Then we thought about coming to market through dietitians and nutritionists, which was a great way to come to market, but quite fragmented. And then you're only addressing the part of the market that's already working with a dietitian or a nutritionist to address these issues. And so how do we get to the rest of the world? Which then brought us to employers and insurers. And that's where 6 months ago, we found our sweet spot. And so I'm so deeply honored and moved by the fact that we won this award at the beginning of this week after only 6 months of working in the employer space. And I think it's because we did exactly what you said. We found a solution, not just for the problem that you and I have, which is how do I use food to treat my health, but also the problem that the employer had, which goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning of this podcast around cost. The cost of healthcare is is climbing astronomically out of control, and employers need to get a handle on it. Otherwise, they won't be able to afford subsidizing premiums in the way that they have been for their employees, and in a labor market that, you know, maybe is getting a little bit softer but continues to be really tight. You need to be able to offer the best benefits. And because we're solving both an employee and an employer problem, I think that's why we were able to like catch fire really quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, because this platform is all about creating impact and bringing diverse voices to the forefront, you know, I really love, and again, this is part of why when Pilar told me about you, I was so taken by it, because you are a relatively young female entrepreneur in the tech space, and you're creating a solution that is actually equitable. And again, like, this is the kind of thing that we need more of. And, you know, I just really celebrate it and your, I guess I'll call it like courage in doing so, because part of what I want to talk about too is you kind of brushed by it and laughed a bit about your background and how you took, you know, it was not a linear path by any means. But people who are listening to this, a lot of people can either say, oh yeah, I've had the same situation where my path wasn't linear. Or people who are like, gosh, I would really love to do something different, but there's a fear factor there, or self-doubt and maybe some imposter syndrome. So can you give people who are listening and me a bit of an understanding of like, what was that like for you to make such a big change, a jump? Again, you mentioned like you were going to be an actor, and then you were in beauty, and now you're in food and in tech. And, you know, I think those are all just, I think it's just very interesting, and people can hear this and think, oh, maybe I can learn something for the how she went about it.
Sure. All of those things that you said around fear and imposter syndrome, I felt all of those things many, many times. And when you look at my path on paper, it can seem disjointed. So you've got acting school, small beauty brand, hedge fund, private equity firm that invested in beauty brands, large beauty conglomerate, food health tech startup. What are we doing here? But when you dig underneath, and kind of my driving force and spirit, not just in my career, but in my life, is how can every experience that I have add new tools to my tool belt? Because at the end of my life, I want to be able to build anything I want. And to do that, I need the biggest tool belt possible with the most diverse set of tools. And so when I decided to go from, you know, acting degree to small beauty startup, I added a world of tools to my tool belt that I had never been exposed to. When I, you know, after a few years at the small beauty startup where I touched everything from product development to, you know, e-commerce and manufacturing logistics, I added a new layer to my tool belt when I went to work at Bridgewater, a hedge fund out in Connecticut, and learned about people and process ops, and learned about myself, and learned about culture. And then I added a new set of tools to my tool belt when I started looking at businesses from the perspective of an acquirer or an investor instead of an operator. And then I took all of those tools to a really large organization where I implemented, you know, intrapreneurship essentially, and created roles that didn't exist within two legacy and established brands. And then at that point, I felt like I had enough tools in my tool belt to go build something of my own. And it was that knowledge and that very like planful approach of adding lots of tools for the next step that gave me the courage and the freedom to do something completely different and to move into a new industry, but take all of those tools with me.
I love that. I'm like smiling inside out because I similarly have always had this mantra of like, add tools to my toolbox, and it made moves that people didn't necessarily understand, or they're like, what the hell's the matter with you? And I'm just like, well, I'm going to go do this. And sometimes it makes it really painful because you're putting yourself in a situation where you're having to learn something from scratch, or, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, you do. And that's always been my actual answer to people is like, I want to make myself as valuable as I can going forward and as equipped, I guess you could say. And I literally call it a toolbox too. So that's why I'm like smiling from the inside out as you're saying it. But you know, again, like as a female in the tech space, in the tech startup space, there's often, you're often probably been one of the only people at the table or in the room, or I don't know what, I actually don't even know if you've raised any capital, but that I've heard that that's really difficult. And that, you know, again, like females in the tech space tend to be on the very low percentage of actually being able to raise that capital. So talk to us about that experience and how have you handled it?
Yeah. I have to tell you that up until this point, I had been very fortunate in my career to always work for other women. Oh. And so, outside of 1 6-month period, every one of my bosses has always been a woman, and I've never felt any sort of, I had never felt any sort of inequity professionally around being a woman. And I think now, after my last, you know, almost 3 years of experience here, I realize how fortunate I was to have that for the first 10 years of my career. Because going in and fundraising, we raised $2 million pre-seed for what we were building. And going in and fundraising was the first time that I ever felt like a person looked at me differently because I was a woman in the room. There were times where I was sitting at a table across from a bunch of guys, which is totally fine. Yeah. And, but they would direct every question to my male co-founder, everyone.
Wow.
And he, you know, Chris, giving him all the credit in the world, would just direct the question back to me. He'd be like, yeah, that's a Sam question. That's a Sam question. And I kid you not, there was one meeting where he must have done this 10 times and they still continued to direct every question to Chris.
Yeah. That's
wild.
It's funny. I'm saying wow, but I mean, I'm not surprised. I will say it's awesome when we see men like Chris and others. Like, I've been really fortunate to have a lot of the men in my career who are really supportive. And again, like you're saying, like, I didn't ever feel, oh, not ever. There were definitely times, but a lot of the great leaders that I had, I never felt different or treated differently because I was a woman. And so it was those times where when you do have those experiences, you're like, holy shit. And you realize like the privilege that you've had to not have to deal with that in certain places. And so it is just like awesome to see when you're seeing the people who are, you know, the men who are acting like you're saying, you know, you're giving that example of Chris. So so that's great. And so in those moments, I think you probably just felt that support. So you didn't need to really worry about it or take it on or fight or anything. You just like keep going about your business.
I mean, I certainly didn't feel great, but I felt very supported by my partner, which is, I think, all you can really ask for in a situation like that. And I felt, you know, after there is one meeting that comes to mind that was just horrible. And I felt angry for a few days after that one. And I had to really center myself and let it go before walking into the next set of meetings and not expecting those to go the same way. But it was, it was jarring, truly jarring.
But Sam, that's such a great point that you're saying, is that it doesn't matter if it's because of gender or race or sexual orientation, whatever it is, if you have that experience, it can be so jarring. And then you can, if you carry it with you, if you put it on like a backpack, then you're going to go into each experience and expect that, which can also alter the way that you're operating in that moment. So I love that you talked about, you had to like let it go. You had to experience it for a few days, it sounds like you're saying, and then decide to like take the backpack off, let it go, and, you know, and go about how you're going to enter that next meeting without that.
Yeah. And I think there are a few principles there, you know, the first, of course, is I am not responsible for other people's actions and for how other people treat people. And so as angry as I felt and as slighted as I felt and as frustrated as I felt by their behavior, the only thing that I can do is choose not to work with them. And we did. We chose not to work with them. And I would go back and make that choice 100 times over. Yeah. And the other thing that I can do, or kind of the other principle there, is to let that go and not do the same thing to other people because I expect that it will come from them. And so as I was walking into that next set of meetings, I needed to that's kind of my exact visualization, like take that backpack off or like take that jacket of weight off and enter this meeting as a human being meeting another human being for the first time and learning about them and them learning about me, and it'll either be a fit or it won't. And that was hard. That was hard to learn.
It's so true. It is. It's like, there's a thing where I think I have to ask myself sometimes when those kind of things happen, where it's like, okay, am I going to actually am I going to carry that person with me? Am I going to carry that and actually like just feed into that more? Or I just, that part of like, okay, I'm going to let it go, but we're human. And so that stuff does affect us. So
of course.
Yeah. So I'm so glad that we talked about that. I asked this to you earlier, but like, as you're continuing this, the year ahead, one thing I want to talk to you about is any kind of like the way you're moving forward into it. And I think this is a lot related to your leadership style, which I have to say, folks, I think I was reading your bio, I think it was, that Pilar and the POV team sent me. And I was so taken with how you talk about your leadership style and where you think it comes from. And again, I go into like, how are you carrying yourself forward and your team and the company forward in this year? And so I would love for you to share or talk about, you know, again, like your leadership style and where that comes from. I think I remember it was like two things that you talked about, which is like radical transparency, I think. And again, I'm going off memory here.
Yep.
And what was the other one? Was empathy.
Yes.
And I like, again, love those as foundational principles. So talk about that. Like, where does it come from? How do you practice it? And what's the impact?
Yeah, of course. So I have had, you know, tools in the tool belt, right? Lots of different experiences that have shaped my leadership style, my communication style, and who I am as a person. And I think the two of the most formative ones are, number one, going to acting school. So I studied the Meisner technique at NYU. And for the first, I'm going to butcher the time period, but I'm going to call it 6 months. So for the first 4 to 6 months of the program, as part of the Meisner technique, your job is to uncondition your responses and to... we do a lot of anticipating. So as we're talking to another person, we are anticipating what they're going to say, what we're going to say next, what, you know, we're thinking about what we're going to have for lunch. Like, we are not present with the human that we're with. And so for the first 4 to 6 months of the program, you stand in a bare room in front of another human being and they say something to you and you repeat it back to them. And they say it back to you and you repeat it back to them. And you just say the same thing to each other over and over and over again until someone is compelled internally to say something different. And it is through that practice that I really honed empathy and understanding and deep listening and presence with the other human in front of me. The other experience that I had that really shaped who I am was working at Bridgewater. And I don't know if you're familiar, if people who are familiar listening are familiar with what Bridgewater is known for, but they're known for this culture of radical truth and transparency. And it's fascinating. And there are a bunch of books about it. But what I took from that is that the best way to care for a person is to be as honest as you possibly can with them. Mm. And it is through that honesty or that transparency that they will grow and you will grow and your relationship will strengthen and you'll be able to root out suboptimalities or problems within your relationship or within your company and shape change. And so if you put those two things together, this like deep empathy and ability to listen and a driving belief in radical transparency and its ability to strengthen and change relationships, companies, whatever, those two things together drive how I currently lead my team and my life.
Wow. It's so, as you're saying it, I'm listening, but also, I mean, really it just made me think about like how effective for those of us who are, you know, leaders and leading other people and we're, you know, for those of us who are, you know, listening and tuning into this, it's like, imagine if you're putting those two things together or the person who, say you're sitting across from your boss or whomever, and they're actually, to your point, present and listening. And how many times have I been in conversations where I know full well the other person is not listening at all. They're literally just waiting for the moment where they can jump in, interrupt, take a breath moment. And you're like, it just feels so futile and frustrating. And so I love that you have shared this with us. And you know, for those of us who are, you know, for those of you who are listening, I think these are, you know, great. Even the technique, I can't imagine that you'd practice that technique in the working place. However, I think that, you know, again, just that awareness even of the combination of empathy and listening and that radical transparency. Because I think a lot of times people hear radical transparency and there's like a whoa, like a fear factor. Like, I don't want to be rude. I don't want to be mean. That means that I'm going to be, you know, okay, as a woman, I'm going to be called the bitch or whatever. You know what I mean? And so I think there's a way to be transparent but in an empathetic way that actually creates positive impact on the people who are in your care.
Yeah. And for me, that shift, that mental shift or that mental bridge, I would say, between those two things is that honesty is kind. Honesty is kind. And so you can be nice and dishonest, but it's really hard to be kind and dishonest. And that's what makes it feel okay for me. Because part of my shadow is that I like to smooth things out. I like to make sure that everyone is okay. I am a people pleaser in some ways. And I've had to learn to strip a lot of that away. And know that even though in the moment someone may not be happy with me for sharing a piece of information or sharing an observation or being honest with them about what I think, in the long term, they will appreciate me more for it.
Yeah. And I think a lot of this also has to do with intentionality, right? Because everything you're talking about, the intention behind it, where it comes from, again, you use the word kind. It comes from a kind place. You're wanting, at the end of the day, it's business and we have to move things forward. And I think also that element of that transparency in a kind way and that empathy and listening, all of that, it can also really be efficient.
Super efficient.
If it's efficient and effective, it's like, yes, let's do that. And I mean, how many people who are listening to this, like if you don't have that honesty from someone or transparency, and a lot of times it can leave us wondering or like, we end up making up crazy ass stories, me included, about why somebody's mad at me or whatever, you know, not speaking to me or whatever. And it's like, but if we just cut through all of that and can be honest and open with each other, then like, again, we're going to get to B a lot quicker than waiting around at A.
Yep. Yes. With less energy spent, less stress, less anxiety. If you have a pact with the people in your life that you're going to be honest with each other, then you don't have to spend all of that in your mind time thinking about what did they really mean? What did they not say? Why did they say the word like that, et cetera? Clearly, I've done this.
clearly, I'm laughing only because as you're saying it, I'm like remembering recent times when that's me. Or, you know, you said the anxiety part, and I've been honest and open about my own struggles with anxiety. And a lot of times it's like because I'll feed that anxiety, that tendency towards anxiety by doing those things like wondering. And, yep. You know, it's like, again, and sometimes I think, you know, I think it's our responsibility as leaders to be empathetic and to work more towards these things that you and I are talking about. At the same time, I do think that there's an element where we can ask that of other people. If we're not getting that from other people, we can choose to ask, or we can choose to also let it go and know that it's somebody else's problem. We don't have to wear it. So.
Yeah. And I think for these principles to be effective within a team, everyone needs to be on the same page and everyone needs to contribute to them. Because if I'm sitting here present with you and you're sort of listening to me, but also emailing and also thinking about what you're going to have for dinner and like what clever thing you're going to say back to me so that I'll like you, we're not getting anywhere, because then we're hitting a wall in our relationship. And so a really simple and effective tool that I've found when that's happening, and it happens to me too. Like there are times, many, many times when I'm sitting with my team and I'm, you know, doing 600 things and not present with them. And they're like, hello.
Hello.
But a really simple and effective tool is to just stop. So when the other person stops talking, just stop talking silently and say, hey. That's it. Just stop talking and say, hey, or hi, or hello. And what usually happens is that the other person looks at you funny, laughs because they realize that they were wherever they were, and says hello back to you. And then you've started anew. It's like a greeting. I don't know why it works, but it just works, and it takes 15 seconds to do, and then it brings you together.
Yeah. It's so great too. And this is a lot of what I really want to be doing with this show, is to have these type of conversations and know that it comes from a place of you and I are literally, we're not preaching to other people. We're like, we literally are practicing this on our own. And so we're sharing this with other people, knowing that a lot of times I'll say like, many of us suffer similarly. So usually if you think you're the only one who's, you know, having someone sit across from you and not listen, or you're the only one who's multitasking like crazy and not paying attention, like, no, so many of us are. So, you know, having these tips and tricks, again, these are tools that you, Sam, thank you so much for doing so, are providing our listeners, are providing me, you know, for our journey forward. And that's, again, it's all about creating that positive impact so we can maximize, you know, the positive, just all of that that we're doing in this world.
Yeah. And I similarly, it sounds like to you, I also suffer from anxiety. I also allow it to be fed through lots of internal chatter, and I call it digestion. Like I'll have a conversation and then digest it for 3 hours in here for things I don't need to do. And so, circling back all the way to the beginning of our chat, my resolution for this year is to digest less.
Oh, okay.
That like mental digestion, and to be more of all the things that we've just been talking about, like be more forthright, be less placating in the words that I use, be less cautious in the way that I speak. I have principles and I have ideas and I have tools and I try my best to stick to them, but I am very far from perfect. Very far.
Yeah. Well, that's also a part, like I talk about it all the time because I wear this myself, which is, I literally wear it because I have a tattoo that says it, which is evolving. And we are all like, what it sounds like you're saying is you're committed to your own evolution. And I love that what you said about like you called it a resolution for the new year is, again, it sounds like you just to recommit to your own evolution as a authentic, diverse leader. And that's awesome. And I so appreciate you coming on and sharing so openly. And folks, I hope you have enjoyed this show. Before we end, one thing I always ask folks, because we hit so many topics, especially here today, if there's, what would one or two takeaways be that you really hope that people get from your episode?
Okay. I'm going to give one Bitewell takeaway.
Okay, great.
And one leadership takeaway. Because I think those are like the two things we covered. My Bitewell takeaway that I hope that you bring into the world is simply to pause and reflect on your relationship with food and how the food that you eat impacts your health. Whether you do it with us or with any other tool or just on your own and through your own intuition, I would love for everyone listening to do that. The non-Bitewell leadership oriented takeaway would be, in one meeting this week, just one, try to be fully present for the entire duration of the meeting with whoever it is that you're with and with yourself and your honest thoughts.
That's good. Well, that is awesome. Both of those are great, folks. You heard it all here. We'll put all of the ways that you can get in touch with Sam. We'll tag her in things. Thank you for everything you're doing for your own evolution, for the evolution of others around you, and to create positive impact in this world. So thank you so much, Sam. Have a great day. Everybody have an awesome day. Thank you.
Thank you. This was lovely. Bye.
Bye.